Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party Network, where every 2 weeks we look at two films from the A24 filmography, and sometimes in between we're lucky enough to talk with the actors, writers, directors and talent involved in bringing these films to us. This week I'm joined by Academy Award winner Guy Nativi. Guy is the writer-director of one of A24's most recent films, Skin. Skin stars Jamie Bell as Brian Widener, who is one of the FBI's most sought-after white supremacists, covered in racist tattoos from head to toe that he has earned performing hate crimes. He conducts a destructive life and is headed down the path of no return. When he meets Julie and her three young daughters from a previous relationship, the responsibilities of fatherhood gives him the desire to leave the movement behind. He endures death threats and harassment from his old gang while attempting to turn his life around. Guy talks to me about the film's origins as a short film, which would eventually win the Academy Award for Best Short Film, its adaptation to feature film within the same year, casting Jamie Bell, the challenges of bringing this film to the screen, the film's place in the current climate, and much, much more. Thanks so much to Guy for joining me, and I hope you enjoy your interview. And me and Dallas will be back next week to discuss Menasha, A Good Time. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show. So we're so used to the classic Hollywood story of what turned people into filmmakers. What's the experience and story of someone in Israel like, and what were the films that inspired you?
Wow. You know, in Israel, industry, the film industry is pretty young. But the luck for all the filmmakers is that we actually have a film fund, and, you know, like you guys, and we can submit our scripts and get a full fund from the States, and we don't have to bring the money back. So it's kind of, and also we have co-production with France and Germany and Canada, and, you know, so the options are not bad. The problem is that it's basically you make a lot of films that are below $1 million, and it's like kind of like, you know, you have to stretch a lot, and the budget is really low. But as an Israeli filmmaker, I grew up, you know, like every Western country, on films from the 70s and 80s. I remember my father took me to E.T. and The Goodfellas, and, you know, and The Untouchables, and I grew up on the 70s cinema, like Ellis Doesn't Live Here Anymore, Midnight Cowboy, you know, those kind of films that had a message and were very, you know, political and social. So, and coming from Israel, obviously, a troubled country, you have a lot of stories to tell. So it's a very small community, but, if, you know, Israel is manufacturing maybe 35 movies every year. So, and we were nominated for an Oscar with foreign films at least 5-6 times. So it's rather, you know, a very prolific country for, you know, and very artistic country for such a small place. So I grew up, you know, watching a lot of European, French, Italian, American films, and I made my first short in 2002, which was my graduate film, and I have sent it to film festivals, and from there I started doing more shorts and features, and yeah, that was my start.
One of the films that we're kind of going to focus on today is your short film Skin. What was your inspiration to write this film? Because, as you mentioned, you're an Israeli filmmaker, and this is a very American story. What was your inspiration to write this film, and how did this come into being?
So I was long distance. I had a long distance relationship with my now wife, Jamie Newman, and you know, it was Tel Aviv and Los Angeles. She's an American actress, and she was living here. And I, at a certain point, after like 2-3 years in, after I proposed, I knew that I'm going to move to the U.S. So I was looking for my first U.S. feature, you know, because I prepared my landing. in a way. And I was sitting in a coffee shop in Tel Aviv, and I saw an article in the paper that had Brian Widener, the skin protagonist, face fully tattooed, from being fully tattooed, transferred into a clean face. And the headline was the only skinhead who made it alive to the other side, or something like that. And the subtext was like, it took him 66 surgeries and 2.5 years of excruciating pain to become normal again. And I was reading the article, and I was blown away by the story and by the change, which is so rare with these kind of people. And I was, I called my wife, and I sent her the article, the link, and she was blown away too. And through MSNBC, who that made a documentary about them, we got their emails, and I wrote them a very long email about, myself and my Holocaust survivor grandparents, and why me, why I should tell the story. And after 2 months, they got back to me, and we Skype, and we spoke over the phone, and they told us, if you're really serious, why don't you come and visit us, see us in Albuquerque, New Mexico? And that's what we did, and my grandfather, who is my, who used to be my, he's now, he passed away, but he used to be my hero and my inspiration. He was very anti-Germany and whatever, considered German after the war. And, it took him years and years to kind of like accept that there's a new generation of Germans. There's new generations of Polish people, and he taught us acceptance and patience and dialogue, and this is coming from a man who lost his entire family in the Holocaust, his entire tribe, which is my family too. So, it's as he taught me a lot, and I saw Brian Widener and Daryl Monjekin's story as something that inspire me, and my grandfather gave me the green light. He said it's a very important story to tell to the world. So we went to Brian's house in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we met with them, and it was an amazing meeting, because it was I he's I'm the first Israeli Jew that he met in his life. He's the first ex-neo-Nazi skinhead I met, so it's kind of like it was insane. But after this long weekend of talking and spilling everything on the table, just spilling his guts, and he signed the life rights on a napkin, and I started writing Skin, the feature.
I'd read that you had people avoiding investing in the film at the start because they didn't believe that white supremacy was a problem in America. So, I mean, this is only a few years ago, but 24 in the past 24 hours alone, we've had a white supremacy shooting in America. What was it like working and writing on Skin and seeing the rise in Trump to the presidency and white supremacy becoming more and more prevalent?
Well, first of all, it's true. No one in Hollywood wanted to put their money in a skinhead redemption story. People told me it's not really a thing in the States. It's, there's no really racism here. It's like it's a maybe like 12 people in the Midwest. It's not a real thing. And I told them, I told producer, look, I've done the research. It's much bigger and threatening than you think. It's almost terrorism. It's domestic terrorism. And they looked at me and they said, look, Hillary is about to become president. Obama is in power. We don't see a real threat to our country. And it's like they didn't get it. They were living in their bubble, So coming from a very troubled country and knowing how the right wing, took the power in Israel, I almost saw it coming. that Trump going to be elected, and it's the rise of the right wing and the extreme fascism will come to its worst in America. And but nobody wants to give me the money, obviously. And I decided with my wife to do something that I did in Israel. Every film in Israel was a short. Every feature that I did was a short before, because that's the way I kind of prepare myself for the long run. Like, it's a sprint before the marathon. So we put all our retirement money to do a short. Shalom Maimon, a good friend of mine from Israel, called me one day and said, "Hey, I have a great idea for a short. Here's the concept." And he gave me the entire concept, and I told him, "Oh my God, this is fucking brilliant." And we wrote it over a weekend together, and skinned the short, came to life. We brought Danielle McDonald, who's our neighbor here, and, you know, we kind of shot it for 5 days. It was my first U.S. kind of like cinematic work, and we edited it with friends from Israel. The entire post-production was done in Israel, and we sent it out to the world. And once we sent it out to the world, to producers, Trump got elected, Charlottesville happened, and then the synagogue massacre in the East Coast happened. So it's like, you know, everything happened. And the short started, you know, we sent it to actors, so suddenly Jamie Bell saw it, and you know, and three producers, Oren Moverman, Celine Recrae, and Trudy Styler, who's Sting's wife, saw the short, read the script for the feature, and said, "We're in," because it's very, very important to tell this story. So, you know, it's the, everything happened in the same year or 2 years that made everything in the zeitgeist, but also crazy, you know. So there were two kind of producers. One that says, "Wow, it's really in the zeitgeist, it's really timely, but we're afraid to do that because it's too crazy to do that right now." And the other ones that say, that said, and these are the producers that came on board, that said, "Not only it's important, not only we're going to shoot it this year, we need to do it for the world to see." So yeah, that's the evolution of Skin the Short and Skin the Feature.
The opening scene of Skin would eventually be mirrored in your feature, and it's such a striking image of just the son having his head shaved by his father. What is it about that image that struck you so strongly that it became used twice?
Well, you know, during the research, I understood that the concept of the storytelling of Skin the Short and Skin the Feature, that it's all about education. It's all about education, because if you look at this guy who shot yesterday in Dallas, in Texas, in El Paso, he was a young kid who probably needed to be approached while he was 15 and 16. He's a troubled kid who was brainwashed. And I seeing Brian Widener joining the gang at the age of 14, it was also someone who was a street kid and was collected by those radicals, by those fascists, and they taught him hate. So I understood that everything starts from action, from us as kids, as teenagers. And I thought that it's very symbolic to start the movie with this grown-up hand carving this boy into a monster, and then cut to seeing Brian with tattoos on his face when he's like 28. But also, it's the concept of the short is, you know, coming from the Bible. I'm not a religious person, but it's a smart sentence that says, "Our fathers ate bad fruit, and the children's teeth will be rotten," which means whatever you teach your kid gonna end up biting you in the ass. So, you know, it's kind of a reverse violence. So I think that both Skin the Short and Skin the Future starts with kids and it end up with kids.
When I kind of saw the Skin short film for the first time, I was really struck by the ending that we often see people in films where it tackles racism and racist. We often see people being the victims of racism, but we very rarely see the consequences for the perpetrator. But we do in this film, and it's a striking ending. How did that evolve, and was there any sort of debate about it, and what was some of the reaction to it?
Two things happened. One, I read an article in the newspaper about a skinhead father, kind of a fascist skinhead father, who taught his son how to shoot Mexicans in the border in Arizona. And he brainwashed his son. And he basically, his 14-year-old son got like hate and everything. It was really something that, you know, he taught him, and the son became a hate machine. And then one night, the father came home at 2 a.m. drunk, and the son saw his shadow and thought he's an African American, you know, kind of burglar, interpreter, like intruder. So he took his father's gun, exactly like the father told him, and he shot his father in the head. And that struck me, you know, in a way that it's what you teach your kids, as I told you before. The other thing that, you know, happened is that Thayer Lamont Jenkins, the African American activist, told me, look, because he was a consultant on the short and on the feature, he told me, look, in cinema, you always see African Americans or black people being bashed, killed, humiliated, suffering, you know, the entire, you never see a revenge in movies. And he said, why don't you just write a cool revenge that has a message, but a smart one, and put it as the end, like, you know, make the revenge happen. And that's what we did, because he gave us the green light. Now, how are the reactions? It's funny because African American in the States are saying, fuck yeah, that's a great, you know, great revenge. White people are like more feel unease about the whole situation. I think it's white guilt in a way. But the best thing that happened to us is that night before, 2 nights before the Oscar, that we had a party at ICM, my agency, and Spike Lee was one of the, you know, people that arrived to the party, and he came to me and to my people and said, I voted for you. So once Spike Lee gave us this green light, for me it was like, all right, I'm done. It's all good.
I love that you cast Danielle McDonald in this that you'd mentioned earlier, in the short and the feature. And it's so great to almost see that her career has exploded since Patty Cakes. That film has really struck me, and I love her and everything. What drew you towards her, casting her in both the short and the feature?
Well, she's an extremely talented person. I adore her. I adored her in Patty Cakes. I think she's a real person, not the Hollywood cliche of what it means to be, you know, coming from those places. She looks real. She's very similar to the real Julie. And she has warmth, intelligence, she's sexy, and she's a real woman. And you know, seeing her and Jamie Bell in a coffee shop before we, and just their chemistry, I was so blown away by that, and I adore this actress, and I think she's amazing. Really,
Absolutely.
she's just so authentic and real, and she could do everything, you know.
Definitely.
She's just a brilliant actress, yeah.
how did you feel to be nominated for the Oscar, to be nominated for an Oscar for the short film? And then what's it like to actually go on and win it? Because you'd mentioned earlier you've previously been nominated, but this time you go that one step further. What's that moment like when you hear your name and film on the biggest of stages winning an award like that?
Well, I, you know, it's surreal. It's like you, I probably like you, you watch the Oscars every year, right?
Yeah.
You watch it live. I woke up like you at 4 a.m. every night, imagining myself, maybe even in the crowd, just to be there. But, you know, we were not the favorite to win. Okay, let's go back a little bit. I was in the shortlist for the Oscars with Strangers, my second short. And we got it, my friend and I, Ersted Moore and I, we directed together and wrote it together. And we got to the 10, but didn't get into the 5, and it was a heartbreak. Because the film won Sundance, went to many festivals, and Fox Searchlight bought it in 2008. So we were shortlisted. So this time I said to myself, I'm not going to even think beyond being in the 10. Because look, it's not an easy movie. It's an extreme movie. It's a gruesome movie. It's brutal. It has a kind of a controversial end, right? And, you know, the voter, the Academy voter is older and white, and, you know, you never know. They usually pick the mainstream movies, right? So we were not a favorite. There was another Canadian movie that was favorite to win. We were second in all the papers. So, you know, we just enjoyed the moment, and getting into the 5 was already like, wow, you know. When they called our names, it was, and I always say, like, people to ask me, how does it feel? It's almost like your bar mitzvah, your wedding, and the birth of your child in the same time. It's beyond insane. It's like surreal. Until today, I'm sitting now in my bedroom right now, and on my right, I have my Oscar. It's even surreal to look at it, you know? It's just surreal. It's like, and in this year, so we had this year of like, we had the short, we shot the feature, we got into Toronto with the feature, to Berlin, and then Tribeca. We won the Oscar with the short, and now we crossed the 100 film festivals with a short film. So it went to 100 film festival. And before the Oscar, we didn't even get to Sundance. We were denied by Sundance, Cannes, and Berlin with a short. You never know.
Absolutely. I mean, it's unique to have your short and feature both come out in the same year. Was that a kind of demanding time for you as like a writer director to have sort of two of these sort of on the go at the same time? Often you hear about the short gets made, it becomes popular, or maybe it wins the Academy Award, and then a few years later the feature comes along. What was it like sort of doing one after the other?
It's surreal. It's very confusing, but also very powerful. Very, very powerful. I think it's, you know, it's two of your kids, two kids. One is a short, you know, kind of a baby skin, and the other is a feature skin. So it's like a different approach to racism, you know. So yeah, I just it's the whole year and the birth of my baby and everything. You know, it's, and Alma, you know, my baby girl is 10 months now. So it's a year that I will never forget in my entire life.
Your feature film differs from Skin to an extent. Was always your aim to go a different road and tell a different story?
You know, I thought about making a scene from the feature skin to show kind of like way of how do I deal with American actors, how do I, you know, with American production, the whole thing. But then Shalon, my friend, came with this concept for the short, and I was blown away. So it kind of reshuffled my plans. But originally it was supposed to be a scene from Skin the Short, the feature.
All your features have been short films first, and this feels like a really unique and exciting kind of process. Why has this been such a successful model for you?
Making shorts into features is really like preparing for a marathon by running sprints. You know, it's every filmmaker. There's a gap between every feature that you make because it takes so long to make features. So, you know, you have sometimes 4 years between feature and another one, till you get the cast, the money, the whole thing. So instead of basically writing, I feel that sometimes you need to refresh this muscle. Work on this muscle. It's almost like going to the gym. You know, it's like you work on a muscle, and you don't want this muscle to be soft. And it's the directing muscle. It's the going being on set and working with actors muscle, which I think it's very important. First, second, I think that when you direct a feature, if you can try the concept, try stuff. You know, in a short, when you have creative freedom, full creative freedom, you can try stuff. You can play with stuff. You can experiment stuff, and then it could always like, you know, it's almost like a lab when you test stuff before you go and do the big project. So that's for me. It gives me a lot of security. It gives me a lot of, you know, it's almost like. For actors, it's like a reading before doing a play or a movie. So it was always successful for me, in terms of like, oh, this is the DNA, and now I extend it to an hour and a half. I love short films. I love like the medium of telling a story in 15, 20 minutes, sometimes 10. And when it works amazingly, but not every feature can be short, and not every short can be feature.
I think Jamie Bell was inspired casting for this film. Why was it for you that a British actor was the perfect person for the role as a, you know, white American supremacist?
The funny thing is that it was Israeli, British, Australian. And American telling a story about what's going on here. But you know, racism is global. And I feel that racism exists in England, and it exists in Israel, and it exists in Hungary, Greece, France, Russia, all over the world. So for me, it doesn't matter if the actor, I mean, as long as he can do American accent perfectly, it doesn't matter where he come from. I think that Jamie Bell is a brilliant actor, one of the best actors in the world. And I think that it was for him opportunity to stretch his abilities from what he'd done before that. And I think that working with him and Danielle and Vera Farmiga and everyone was just school for me. It was almost like, you know, I learned so much from working with these exquisite actors. And Jamie, the process that he went through, I mean, taking somebody who everybody knows as Billy Elliot, who's the opposite of Brian Wilder in Skin, and turn him into a monster was a real fascinating process for me. I Oren Moverman, and I'm giving him the credit. He brought Jamie Bell. He met him in a coffee shop, and they spoke about life, and about, you know, about next project and the whole thing. And he called me and he said, look, I met with Jamie Bell. I saw a man, not a kid anymore. And I went to Jamie, to Virginia, and I met him and I saw a man with a lot of depth and sensitivity. So, you know, when you're portraying a monster, it was easy. It was really important for me that it won't be the cliche of a just a monster. This is a tormented monster with feelings, with depth, with emotions, with a lot of stuff. And Jamie, for me, could bring that to the film.
And did you work together on sort of the physical and mental transformation to get Jamie into sort of that mindset and into that character?
Well, you know, I think that I told Jamie what I want and need for the film, and Jamie told me, okay, let me have my process. And he did a phenomenal job gaining weight, you know, going into this mindset of this dark mindset. He went to Brian Widener. He stayed with him for a month, and you know, he really became this person. And then he did this test with tattoos with Stevie Battles, the genius tattoo artist, not tattoo artist, but makeup artist who made the tattoos. And he just, when he came to set for the first day, it was mind-blowing. The guy was Brian Widener. So I trust my actors that they do their due diligence and their homework. I fine-tuned them while working with him. But we had a lot of discussions before he went into this journey, and I told him whatever, yeah, stuff that I need.
One of my favorite things when I watched this film for the first time, I went into it blind a few months ago when I got the chance to see it at the Edinburgh Film Festival. All I knew was the poster, Jamie Bell, hey, I'm sold, was that it blended family drama with body horror really well. What was it like for you sort of crafting this film and bringing together a lot of different elements to create something really exciting?
Where did you see the film?
The Edinburgh Film Festival.
Oh, cool. What was it like? Can you ask the question again?
Yeah, so what was it like to... I think the film... What I love about the film is that it blends this family drama and tension with body horror. What was it like combining sort of a lot of these different elements together to make something as exciting as Skin?
You know, the whole work on this movie was very complicated because... It's a low budget movie. We made it for peanuts, and you had dogfights, kids, tattoos, gunshots. It was shot in -5 in upstate New York in Kingston. It was in the middle of the winter. You had a lot of extras. You know, the opening scene had like something like 200 people. And I had only 23 days of shooting it. So it was an easy task for me. And I became ill in the middle of shooting it. I had pneumonia for 3 days. I was on antibiotics, and I directed from my bed. They basically brought a bed into set, and I directed the movie. But I gave everything I got. Everything I got. And, you know, my good friend from Israel gave me this frame, and in this frame, when I came to the States, she gave me a present, the frame, and in the frame was a sentence, and the sentence said, "You were once wild here, don't let them tame you." It's Isadora Duncan, and which means, do your art and do it the way you want to do it, and don't let anyone dictate your art, because you need to continue what you started in Israel. The fact that you moved a country doesn't mean that you're going to do a different cinema. So for me, and I promised that to my actors and myself, I wanted to do authentic, real, raw message driven and politically and socially charged movie. That's what I grew up on, and that's what I wanted to do. And I did everything in my power with the support of my amazing producers to bring real and raw cinema. I hope I did it. I hope, you know, I succeeded doing it. But it's what is important for me to go through this process.
You know what, you've blown my mind when you mentioned the short time scale of making this film and the budget, because it doesn't seem like that on screen. You've done something so excellent here. It's brilliant. I can't believe that. That's awesome.
Well, thanks, mate. Thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
What I'd love to know as well is that when a film like this comes along and, you know, someone like A24 gets involved, what's the conversations around marketing this film and making sure it gets to the right people and people that, as you mentioned, sort of that maybe there's that 15-year-old that needs to be, this message needs to get to right now. What's the kind of conversations around marketing this film?
Well, look, it's not an easy film to market, especially now. You know, yeah, the films about Vietnam were made 10 years after Vietnam War. So all the, you know, Coming Home and Deer Hunter and all those very critical film about, you know, it took a while to digest the war and until filmmakers started making films about the war. Here, Skin is in the middle of chaos. It's in the middle. Look what, you know, you just said, look what happened yesterday. It's still going on. I don't see that vanishing at all. I just see it becoming worse. But I think Skin, and my wife told me this sentence, which is very smart, is a long-term movie. I don't think it's kind of a movie that will, you know, attract immediate audience, and it's a hard movie to swallow. It's a long-term movie, and it will be relevant, unfortunately, even 7 years from now. So that's why I think that A24 would very wisely thought that, you know, they wanted it to be online and in cinemas at the same time. And that's why we are on DirecTV in many, many, many millions of Americans, because, you know, it's if you have a chance to go to the cinema, you are thinking twice if you want to see a very heavy movie, a very dark movie like that, or you want to see Spider-Man. You know what I mean? It's not an easy movie for Americans to digest. It's basically picking the wound that America suffers from today. And this movie is basically a mirror in front of our face saying, hey, this is us. This is you. Why don't you start talking about it? Why don't you start, you know, it's not easy. But we know it's not easy, and I never wanted to do an easy movie. But this movie was sold to 55 countries around the world. It's going to have its UK premiere and going to get, you know, we're going to screen it to BAFTA members. And Jamie Bell is getting a lot of attraction for his performance. So I hope that it will find its audience around the world, not only in the States, and Jamie Bell will get the attention that he deserves.
Absolutely. And what was it like when I'm thinking when you said earlier on that, you know, producers, investors didn't want to touch this movie, and then someone like A24 comes along and says, hey, we want to distribute your film. What was their pitch to you on why you should go with them, and what was it like for you to go, you know, a few years ago, people didn't want to touch my film, and now the people behind things like Moonlight, Lady Bird, so many other great films, Midsommar, want to take on my film. What was that like?
Oh my God, A24 is a dream. It's like being with the A Club, you know, with all these amazing films. First of all, it's I was beyond. Happy and it was in it happened one day or the day of the screening of Skin at TIFF at Toronto. It was the day or the night after or something like that. It was very, very close. And we had another two offers, and we chose A24. A24 is basically, I adore every movie that they make and they buy and that they do. They're just such a quality tastemakers, and they have the guts and the vision to take movies that are not easy at all, but you know, they are fighting for good cinema to be out there, and it's not easy. So I give them a lot of respect, and I will be always grateful for them to choose Skin, because they had other options. You know, Toronto was full of amazing movies, and I was flattered, and I still am, and I want to keep doing movies that they buy. You know what I mean?
Have you got any sort of personal favorites yourself?
Oh my god. Wow. So yeah, I like Good Time. Do you see Good Time?
Yeah, that's a cracking one. I love that.
Oh my god, it's so good. It's so good. I love Midsommar. I think it's a cool movie. I really like Moonlight is one of my favorite movies of all time. So good. I think that I opened their catalog to see. Wow. Okay. So here we go. A Prayer Before Dawn. Did you see that?
That's one of the few I've seen 77 of their films, and that is one of the ones I've yet to see. It's coming up on our watch schedule.
Okay, you must watch it. It's a great film by a French director, Jean, who I met. I saw his film. He saw my film. He lives in New York. He's a great movie that really got under the radar in some ways. Such a good movie. Was shot in Thailand fully. I like Hereditary. I think it was great. And I like The Disaster Artist was great. The Killing of Sacred Deer was brilliant. The Florida Project was great. But Good Time is amazing. And then Moonlight, obviously. American Honey. You know, American Honey is one of those movies that either you don't understand, you don't get, or you love. I love this movie. I know it's long. I know it's like, you know, but I love Andrea Arnold. I'm a big, big fan of Andrea Arnold. I think this movie should have gotten more respect in the award circles.
Absolutely. I love that one too.
I also like Swiss Army Man.
That's always a great one.
See that?
Yeah, that's a good one. I've got that montage theme as part of my running playlist.
Oh my god. And the three last movies that I adore, Green Room, that was great. Krisha, which is the DP of Skin the Short, and The Witch, which I thought was great.
So many excellent ones there. So many. And it's
so many.
And your film's so part of it now as well.
Yeah, it's part of the you know, the club, and I'm very, very you know, honored, very honored.
It must have been a sort of an intense kind of few years for you with Skin the Short and then Skin the Feature, and really immersing yourself in quite a tough world. How have you sort of unwound and decompressed at the end of the, you know, how did you sort of even decompress at the end of a day shooting films like this? Was that even possible?
I meditate. I'm a few things. First of all, my wife and my baby are my anchor. So family for me is the most amazing balance for everything. But I also started meditating 2 years ago, and it changed my life. I went to the David Leitch Foundation here in LA. I got this amazing tool of meditation that actually balances your thoughts, and you think about everything when you close your eyes for 20 minutes and just go into this mindset of thinking, of digesting stuff. It's very, very important. But you know, I'm also very focused. I'm not a newbie, because I did 3 features in Israel. I made 4 shorts. So when I came to the States, I didn't come as a student. It wasn't my first feature. Yes, it was my first American feature, but not my first feature in life. So I had the security and the self-confidence of that what I'm doing is the right thing. You know, I know what I want when I tell the story. So for me, I'm coming from such a crazy country where as a kid, as a teenager, I went through war, and we got those missiles and we from Iraq, and we had those like crazy situation. Making a film should be enjoyable, and just, you know, it's something that I love doing. So for me, it's not stressful. It's not like, for me, it's just making art. It's such a beautiful, you know, we're so lucky that we can have the opportunity to have to make our art. So, you know, you just take things in perspective.
And finally, what's coming next? Because Skin is my first introduction to you as a filmmaker, and I'm keen to hear what you're doing next that I can look forward to.
So my next movie is with Sight Unseen, or Movement Company. It's about my grandmother, who it's a story that I wrote while I was waiting for Skin to happen. It's about a woman who is 55. In 1985, she's a Holocaust survivor, and she wants to kill herself because she's so depressed. She has post-traumatic, you know, nightmares from the Holocaust, and she just doesn't want to live anymore until she meets, and she's a mother, 2 girls, and a husband and everything, and she works in a bank, and it's in New York, and she meets this woman who is 32, gorgeous, just imagine Sophia Loren when she was 30 something. And this woman is a belly dancer, and she tells her, I'm gonna make you happy. And she starts doing all those healing and spilling, and it's like, fasting and meditation and dancing and know your body well, stuff that today is very mainstream. It's but in the 80s it was like a little bit, alternative. And this woman becomes happy, and the family is like, wow, it's a miracle. How is it possible? And wow, it's this woman made wonders. And what we didn't know is that actually this woman is a cult leader, and she took all my grandmother's money from the reparation from the Holocaust. My grandmother stole money from the bank in order to transfer to her. And she made her divorce my grandfather and cut all ties with my family, and moved to her apartment together with another 37 women. And when the police started investigating, and the families started to ask questions and what's going on and this and that, she took all these women to Virginia in the middle of nowhere in the woods. She bought this plantation in a place called Yogaville. And she lived like a queen when my grandmother was her right-hand geisha, lover, sister, whatever you want to call it. And she basically, made them worship her and work her. Cut to 5 years later, my mom and my aunt are flying to Virginia to bring their mom back home. So it's basically the confrontation between the cult leader, my grandmother, and her 2 daughters.
That sounds incredibly gripping.
Yeah, it's really start. It's a really family drama. It's asking what it means. What are you willing to do in order to be happy? You know, are you happy with your original family? Maybe not. Are you happy with your spiritual family? Maybe not. Maybe you'll always be, tormented by demons from the past. But it's also about, mothers and daughters and relationship between the mother becomes, you know, the child and the daughters are the grown up in charge. So it's a lot of questions, a lot of layers that my family still struggle with. And you know, my grandmother is buried in a tree trunk in Virginia in the woods. So it's unsolved mystery in my family, and it's something that I needed to deal with cinematically. And I'm still doing the research and understand what happened, but we are out to casting this film. It's all women. It's totally different from Skin, but not that different because Skin is also a cult. You know, it's a neo-Nazi cult, and this is a women's cult. So that's Harmonia. It's called Harmonia because the name of the cult was Harmonia.
Well, I hope that we can get you on again in the future to talk about that film, because I'm just sitting there
Oh,
going, I'm
another.
immediately wanting to see this straight away.
I'd love doing this. You're great, and you're a big cinema lover. And hopefully I'll meet you because you know Skin is being distributed in England, and we are out in England, in the UK, and we will be releasing the film on September 27th in approximately 12 cinemas. It's kind of a small kind of distribution, but then we'll arrange about four main BAFTA screenings, and you know, and around 1,000 people, BAFTA members that will, you know, will generate a hopefully a potential nomination for Jamie.